Hi folks, this is Dave Schmidt. I want to welcome you to another edition of the Sedona Connection. I'm sitting here in the home again of my good friend of Mark here in Maui, and I have a special guest this evening that I have been on his program in the past, and when I was here on one of my recent trips to Maui, and it's Rob Potter. Now, many of you know about Rob Potter. He has his radio program, which is called Victory
of the Light.
Victory of the Light. And he has also worked a lot with, in connection with, an individual you've heard is called Cobra. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to be here in Maui, I got to take advantage of having a time and a session with Rob. So, Rob, I want to welcome to the radio program again tonight. It's wonderful to be with you, buddy. Let's do this. Let's just start out. We're going to just have a general roundtable discussion.
Okay.
We'll just let it go where it goes. But I want you to first take a couple minutes to introduce yourself. Tell us about your background. You told me about some of this stuff goes all the way back into the 1970s.
Yeah.
How you got to where you are today, it's kind of like me. It kind of seems to find you
right
more than you go looking for it. And it's obviously that you know you're doing what you're supposed to do. So welcome to the program here, Rob. Introduce yourself to the folks and tell us about yourself.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you, Dave, for having me on here on the Sedona Connection, and also, of course, Mark, for hosting this conversation, as well as my friend Louis Martins, who just came in from Bolivia, is asleep downstairs. So thank you for having me here, and it's an honor to be here. I guess I could start back. For me, it all goes back to my youth. I had a spiritual inclination, a kind of a mystical seeking and knocking for the truth in my life, and I was very interested in pyramids, and a girl at school told me, I know the pyramid man, and it ended up being Fred Bell, whose great uncle invented the telephone. His father invented the automatic transmission, the alternator for Henry Ford. Fred grew up on Henry Ford's plantation there, running through the hemp fields as a young boy, and received an offer to work on the shockwave of the atomic bomb when he was 15 under Leonard Katz at Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he observed the precursor to the CERN, but a smaller linear accelerator with a collider, and they have a Wilson cloud chamber where they shoot particles into a small space, and they aim and they hit like a calcium atom or something, and watch how things move. And they were starting to understand the quantum field. And he said he got some images and visions there about some of his future technologies, but he's a super smart kid and ended up getting a PhD at physics in 17 and was inducted in the Air Force at the age of 16. They took him to Santa Barbara, and then he was stationed near San Francisco on the early warning radar. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, he observed UFOs coming down, and they would fill out what are called the DDS-332 forms, unidentified flying objects, and they turned them in to the watch commander, who burned them. And on the second day, he said, you know, there's a public thing, and you're not allowed to burn these, and this is public knowledge, and people need to know about this. You know, he's, at this point, I think, 21 or 22, and he is the top tech on an ANFS P-38 radar set, the highest technology radar in the world at the time, looking out at the farthest westernmost point besides Hawaii and Alaska for early warning radar. You could fry an egg at 10 miles out, 50,000 feet. Very, very powerful radar set. And they were always kind of looking down, who is this little smart act, little brat, you know, telling us what's going on here? And then the next day he came in and he got a little more boisterous. And then the watch commander said, have you seen a UFO? And he said, you know damn well we all have. And he said the watch commander waved his finger, and into the door came in MPs, and they put him in psychiatric ward. So he went to psychiatric ward, and he said, look, just tell them they give me an honorable discharge, I'm out of here. So that's what they did. He got an honorable discharge, and then he went to work in the private sector. And had spiritual experiences with an Indian guru, and from there kind of took off on his spiritual mission. In the meantime, he was working on the Saturn, Gemini, and Apollo mission for NASA and JPL and Rockwell afterwards, after he left. So by the time I met him, he was, I think he was 27 or 28, 27 years old, and he just made his first pyramids, and he had a very strong spiritual connection to the Great White Brother Sisterhood and the Ascended Masters, and he was his teacher was Dwal Kul, a Tibetan, which is a close association of Saint Germain, and he was dealing with scientific stuff with the pyramids. Right after I met him, about a year and a half later, he was having contacts with the Pleiadians. Dwal Kul had handed him off in a telepathic communication. A meeting was arranged, and they started landing in Laguna Beach over the hill from where I live, which also is where, oddly enough, George Adamski lived, one of the original UFO contactees from the 50s. So here I am with Fred, and his house was pretty trippy. He was a Renaissance man. He was into crystals and had his own art. He was an airbrush artist, obviously a scientist, and literally a rocket scientist, but really cool kind of party animal kind of guy. And I was very young, and I began to work in my association with him, and we started building these different pyramid system designs, sacred geometry combinations of pyramids using crystals, lasers, and Tesla coils to accelerate the environment and change the subatomic structure of the people within the thing to be able to connect to what we call your higher self or your I Am presence. Some people call it the Christ mind or the Atma, or the essence of God, the spirit spark within us. And there's a whole story on that. But so I was going up to his house and going through certain ceremonial order magic rituals, which are kind of like, I'd light incense. There was always candles burning in his house. And I was having out-of-body experiences. And I'd be there, and next thing you know, I would watch the earth disappear. I remember going up through the building, and next thing I know, I'm looking down at the earth. I can see the sun on one side of the earth, and it's dark on the other. And I'm getting instructions, and it's very difficult to kind of explain, because these were just visionary, mystical experiences. And as a very young child, I did, you know, 17, tender age, young man, I guess I should say, but I was very quiet and silent about it. I'd come in and next morning, and he'd look at me like, no comment? How can I comment on that? So I'd have like 4 or 6, sometimes 4 hours out of body and come back, and he'd look at me and go, well, why don't you go down and put some Epsom salt and take a bath to kind of solidify my out-of-body experience. So this went on for some years. They were very beautiful, positive experiences. So we were traveling the country with the precursor to the Conscious Life Expo and the precursor to the Whole Life Expo, which was called the National Health Federation. And this was a health federation show that was started in the, I think it's in the late 50s, by a group of people that were outraged that a guy had been healing people with something called the Depolar Ray, which I think it was Thomas Colson and Fred Hart. It was based on a design from the Venusians that utilized a cathode ray tube and used a violet flame energy. And so they would develop this. They were curing cancer, and the government came in and put them in jail and destroyed the machines. The same old thing like they did with Rife and other people like that. Sure. So they went to the congressman, and they just decided to create a health lobby. And by the time we entered it in the 70s, we had Pat Flanagan, Victoris Kovinskis, we had Pavlo Areola, David Carmos, Gypsy Boots, I'm missing a bunch of them, eventually Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. We had a whole host of health experts. Bernard Jensen, who created iridology, used to travel. I used to travel the country with them. We'd go L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, Bowling Green, Michigan, New York City, sometimes South Carolina, Florida, Houston, and back. And these are months. We'd usually go one, so 6 or 7 times a year. We're going to the booths, and I'm selling pyramids that you wear on your head. We were famous for that. Our pyramids got in the James Bond movie where they took Fred's device and made it the engine that ran the outer space one. Remember with Jaws and the little girl with Roger Moore? They went in outer space, Draco, that one. So if you look closely, there's one of our pyramid designs spinning there. It's actually a Pleiadian design. So from these experiences and traveling the country, there was a great deal of emphasis in my mind on the spiritual aspect. For me, I was a young kid yogi. I was into meditation, hatha yoga, kriya yoga, and autobiography of a yogi. And I was always feeling, by golly, we got to go back to the garden. There's no way this earth can continue. I want us to go back to teepees and live. I don't care if we have lights. I want the love to flow between people without materialism. And when the ET information came into me, I said, oh, we can be spiritual, respect nature, and go high tech. Travel the stars. Have liquid metal that, you know, they don't have lights in the spaceships and these technologies. They have a certain technology. It's a crystal liquid metal that, you know, it's like magnesium, and it luminesces and the whole room lights up and there's no shadow. You go in some of these higher tech ET and these underground bases of the benevolence, and there's no shadow because light's coming from everywhere. So interesting stuff like this, all these stories started interesting me, and I started to learn about the spacehood and the space family of light. And, of course, my out-of-body experiences were conjoined with these type of experiences. Fast forward 79, Michael L. Legion comes into my life. He's kind of in a sovereignty kind of, I think they're grand juries he's into, and he's into the revaluation and stuff too. But he was very more adept and experienced in these things and had a lot more confidence. Like I met Corton, and for me, I'm out of body experience and I'm a disembodied. I'm getting informational downloads, but for me, it's not a corporeal thing. And he goes, oh, yes, I remember clasping Corton's hand and all this kind of stuff. I go, really, dude? So, and I wasn't really sure about all this, but yeah. He kind of gave me my ET 101, and I started to read a very wonderful book called Star Wards by Richard Miller of the Solar Cross, and this was the original communications of the various civilizations within our solar system from Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, and beyond, giving discourses on what their planets are like, how they live, their emphasis on balance and order, and the technology of developing ourselves spiritually through meditation and brotherhood. And they explained to us that they had attempted to go through the world's governments for a full open disclosure of interplanetary cultural exchange, only to be turned down by those in positions of power who had already struck deals with other groups that were not on the benevolent side, had promised technology in exchange to be able to abduct people, to blank them out, and to study them, supposedly. And this group said that, yeah, go ahead, keep your nuclear power. The benevolent said, look, you have to get rid of nuclear weapons and nuclear power. We can't work with you guys. It's not good for yourselves or the universe, and it's ridiculous. Some of the hawks in the military saw this as, you want us to disarm ourselves. Well, they could disarm them if they would have looked at them. The higher dimensionals have already proven. After Hiroshima, they said there's no more dropping bombs on people. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
You can have small thermonuclear stuff. And the whole SALT talks was a joke because they know they're not going to be able to do that. In fact, as we realize now, the secret space program, they had already been in outer space and having bases at this time too. So from my perspective, I was having these experiences back then. And then I was fortunate enough to have a teacher sent to me through Gabriel Green, a very famous contactee, who told me and called me one day in a telepathic communication with an alleged ascended master, which people can talk about, but when it comes down to it, the guy showed up at Gabe's house. Gabe had never met him. I had never met him. And he trained me and taught me a bunch of things. And I won't go into that because that's another story. But from that experience, I became more aware that my experiences were real in the evenings with Fred, and I started to have more physical ship sightings and lights and stuff in 20, and I would be crying at 3 in the morning, "Why, just pump up your light. Okay, they make the light bigger. Why don't you land? Is it real? I wanted to have this experience," and I just wanted a physical, more tangible experience. Mm-hmm. So when Gabriel called me out, I had this ship land, and I never needed another to see another ship. So I know they're real. I had a telepathic communication, and I've been fortunate through my life. I've had other contacts with benevolent space people, which is generally a meeting in the physical, telepathic communication and acknowledgement of who they are, and basically a short meet and greet with a little personal interaction and sometimes gentle guidance for me. Now, I haven't had the long-term face contacts on board a ship or anything like that. I had one experience where I went with out of body, and I was on a ship, and I remembered the whole thing. And they kind of blank slated me, and they left me with a little piece. And I know it was very positive and very benevolent. It was a very powerful day in my life, and yet it was confusing. So in all through the 80s and the 90s, I have all this knowledge and experience and continue to study on a metaphysical spiritual line about the body temple, the workings of the esoteric anatomy of the third ventricle, the parasympathetic nervous system, Laya yoga, placing your tongue in certain positions in your head, and certain mantras and meditational experiences to bring about a higher connection to the soul. And then I try to translate my experience to people, and it was always shot down as very crazy and fringe. And of course, when the Grays came out and all of Bill Cooper stuff, I was very, it was difficult. I had a chip on my shoulder because I was attacked when I tried to share the information. And I didn't always try to share, you know, alien bones, abductions, skulls, and fearful stuff. I tried to share the positive aspect of the spiritual side of this communication. And because people don't see them on a mass level, they wouldn't have to hear, "For God's sakes, just show up."
Yeah.
Well, they do. And we have pictures, the government knows, but the government's hostile. So realize they've been warned, they don't want to endanger people they contact, and they don't want to endanger themselves. Some of them cannot be, their technology is so high, they can't be attacked or anything, the Venusians and stuff. Other groups from other things like Cobra's Planet X, they're very vulnerable. They don't have the level of technology and the spiritual ability to dematerialize like Valiant Thor and to read everyone's thought, to have a ship that knows everyone's thoughts within a mile. So there's different levels of dimensional contact here. So from that experience, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, and I kind of went dark, and I never was really a big public presenter. I know I have the skill set for that. And in some ways, I think I'm more adept than Fred Bell on that. No way am I close to him on the scientific level. But I just was been waiting my whole life till my 50s. I'm going, what's going on? And so it was in England some years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago in 2012. I was very deep prayer and in a dark night of my soul with pain and suffering in my life and the world, and not being able to have fulfilled my mission and my life calling, because I obsessed my entire life on this. And what brought me to this position was a prayer. It was a cloudy, rainy day, and I had just prayed for 2 hours, crying my heart out to take me off of this world or to use me as God's instrument in some way to be part of this plan and the unfoldment. And what happened was the sun came out, and I felt this deep warming in my heart. I mean, it was right above me, and the sun shone, and the birds were there, and it was kind of raining in the whole town, but in this park I was at, there was a beautiful, it's like a Maui sunset, kind of like the Japanese, right, where you have the rays of the sun, and it was just magical, and I had a good feeling in my heart, and I didn't realize that my prayers had been answered, but during this time I'd been blogging on Cobra's blog. So I had developed a level of respect on the blog, and then Cobra reached out to me, and I kind of started my own thing. So that's my backstory. And I kind of see myself like you. you know, after meeting you, have a great light in your eye, an adherence for truth, and a seeking for whatever it is that will make this planet better, and to become part of that and to encourage others along these pathways. I felt that the outer world is important to change, and I have a big description of that, but I'm finding more and more, the more you try to press on the outer world changes, it just, you know, people confuse and have different viewpoints. I'm trying to focus now more on the spiritual information so that people can align themselves in a metaphysically spiritual orientation, and all of these things in the future can come forward. So that's where I got to where I'm at now. That was really long.
No, but man, what a great story. I mean, but it does. It makes sense because it fills in the past to see where you got to where you mm-hmm. are today. It's interesting because, again, you know, your shift and change came right around in that time around 2012. And it was that way for me, too. I mean, mm-hmm. I had pretty much, you know, lived most of my life as an everyday normal guy, you know, but I was fairly conservative, have a background, you know, of a minister, and then I was in politics for 20 years, 12 of it as a mm-hmm. as an elected official. And I really started going through a shift and change in my whole thinking process, but it's still much in what I call being involved in the third dimensional world. Mm-hmm. That was probably right around 2002, 2003, where I really started going through the shift and change. And then I lost my reelection in 2006, and that was a divine assignment for me. It was time for me to be done with politics. Mm-hmm. And I went through some really deep financial, you know, kind of, you know, dark night of the soul, where I lost everything I had through the financial crash of 2008. And that just, what it did was that when I saw that 2008 financial crash was a deliberate plan to pump and dump by, you know, what we call the cabal sources, it just pissed me off. And I just started doing my research. And the more research I did, the more I began to discover. And then I always had a form of a spiritual background because, you know, I'm a seminary graduate, but mm-hmm. just looked at it from a different angle. And now I'm totally looking at it from a different angle on the whole spiritual side of it. But underneath that was always this quest, wanting to know the truth, wanting to understand why are we here, what's going on, and what's really true about what's in this world. And it just kind of led me down one more path, what I keep saying, these deep rabbit holes, where they find me, I don't go looking for them.
I know.
And it's kind of been the same experience for you.
You're like, where am I at?
I know. How did I even get here? How did this even happen? I mean, it was just yesterday I had some meetings with some folks where I'm saying, I'm at the point now where I don't say, how did this happen? Why am I getting here? Why me? I don't say that anymore because it just doesn't surprise me anymore. So what's interesting is tell us a little bit more about, from your experiences, where do you see things going from here?
Well, my experiences and the revelations of the divine benevolent family is that they have absolute control and dominion on the material plane, because they don't seek the material. For them, it's spiritual. They are not here to wrest control and to manipulate our physical. They did that for me in repeated phenomenon demonstrations to allow you to see that. When you grasp that, then you realize, wow, they have a tremendous amount of humility and respect. And, you know, you get a telepathic communication or something, and you get caught up in your life, and, you know, some things are going on long. And I mean, I'm an Aries. I get impatient and under stress. I have a tea kettle on me that goes, rah, 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 and it's all gone when yeah. it goes. But, you know, sometimes I get like, wow, that was unnecessary. Want to look at that one? You know, that's kind of the guidance that I get. So, knowing that they have that, there is a point in time. And as I understand it, from what I understand, is that this Earth is a living, breathing, conscious being with all the life forms in it, part of the cells of the greater logos or living word of the planet, which is part of the living word of the solar system. Our Earth occupies the heart location, the fourth planet, from the sun, and is the heart. Our sun occupies the heart center in what's called the grand mand of the heavens, where the pineal gland would be the Pleiades, the pituitary would be Sirius, and So our solar system represents that. So as I understand it, there's passive orders and cycles of change. And this planet, unlike many other planets, which normally reach a level of understanding and growth into a higher dimensional relationship with the Creator and do not fall back into error. This planet has been sent repeated teachers and avatars and has constantly come to a position of warring and destroyed the civilizations. This has been observed, and because the Galactics see us all as family, as part of the living body or the Church of God or the Christ principle, there's a sore spot on the heart, and they're here to heal it. And so they're very patient, and they work in dimensions beyond us that we can't understand, trying to affect energetic cosmic waves that we don't haven't even begun to even perceive or measure. So there's that group, and then there's another practical group that are dealing with, let's call them, other beings, extraterrestrials, who are not so friendly and are actually consciously working against the Creator's plan. There's a definite delineation there, and they have inserted themselves into our world and are constantly sabotaging the human condition. We have not only Anakai, but we have all kinds, 22 different race genes make up the human genome. Eventually, we all have different aspects of that. The ETs are very much into the genetics for the pure light of the soul to express itself. In fact, the Earth experiment was designed so that angelic functions could be transposed into flesh. So there seems to have been a lot of confusing politics around this, and I don't know but the entire details, but we're told that there was this type of battle and there's some problems going here. And it was promised by God after the last flood that humanity would not be destroyed again, that humanity would achieve and raise its vibration. And as one group from the planet Corendor says, we will drag your world kicking and screaming, if need be, into an era of peace. And they're telling us that the vibrations from the galactic center core have been increasing their bombardment in our area of space, cosmic light, some call it the photon belt, whatever it is. This divine energy normally comes through the sun and radiates out through what are called S waves and P waves. And when the Earth is out of harmony, that will cause tectonic plate shift and destroy the life on the planet so it doesn't become a virus and a cancer and spread to the rest of the universe. When they're negative as we are, they are shielding us to protect life, and so that we will, as many people as possible, can reach a light quotient to be able to survive. At a certain point in time, the fence comes down and a big vibrational shift changes, and many people will unfortunately lose their lives because of the physical body won't be able to take the rays of vibration. We're not our meat suits anyway. These people will be caught up in what's called a planetary roll call or an ascension where the entire lower astral plane is released and all the souls that have been here in quarantine will now get to go where they want to go and where their souls are called to their own vibration. Right now, we've been jammed into a classroom with kindergartners, first graders, special needs, angry psychopaths, sociopaths, super high spiritual beings, and it's very confusing. So there is a plan of redemption for this world, as I like to use those terms. And as we abide in the truth in our daily life and adhere to the spiritual laws of God, which for me is the good news, and the good news is that we have a loving mother, father, God. It's real simple. We're sons and daughters. Therefore, we're brothers and sisters. And if we follow the golden rule, it's that simple. But we have fallen so far away through the intuition and the heart space feeling of connecting to each other that we get caught up in our intellect. And I use this vision because part of it, when I was younger, I used to think people have to understand this or they're not going to get it. And here I'm trying to take my perspective. I'm standing on one side of the kitchen and I see this, someone's on the other side of the kitchen. Doesn't mean their view is not valid, but when I was younger, I used to feel like Tigger. You know, I'm Tigger, and I'm going to chase down Christopher Robin, and I'm going to tackle him. And then like Jason Statham, I'm going to get him in a hold. I'm going to put him down, and I'm going to take the spinach of Popeye, and I'm going to shove it down his throat. And he's going to learn and understand all of this knowledge. He's going to believe what I believe about the Venusians and my view on that. And it's not about that. It was so ignorant. And, you know, it's just like religion. People want to, you know, Hare Krishna, push you into that belief. Or the Christians want to push you into that belief instead of pushing you into the love connection, the spiritual knowing that we should develop within ourselves. So for me, I've had a big growth with that. That was some time ago. I used to try to push the river. And I do present controversial information on the history of the planet based on some of my teachers who I've had personal experience with, who I have a great deal of faith in. And a lot of my viewpoints come from my own experience, but they're based on faith from teachers that I truly have had experiences with that I don't know if their experiences are true, but their viewpoints, I've had phenomenon occur around them. I've met several space people at Dr. Frank Strange's meeting in Las Vegas, two of them. I've had other experiences through his work, and I feel that he's a real deal. And I know they don't lie, and I will beg to differ with Corey on those certain issues that he thinks about those things, but that's my viewpoint, and I feel that the veil will come down, curtain will rise, and where you have developed yourself spiritually, you will be met in measure with responsibility and an ability to serve. For those who have led their lives in material things and have not developed themselves spiritually, they're going to go through a little more difficult time of transition and allowing their belief structures to expand to encompass a higher spiritual message. Nothing a little remedial reading in an open heart can't cure, but it may be more difficult for them. I believe in the future, eventually, there's going to be some earth changes. They're intended not to be dramatic, to happen as far away from population, but there could be some very intense weather. I know from the Sharula Dux, the woman who came out of Telos, she said that we know you can know you're very near the end before the shift. When electricity starts to go out, when our electrical computers and things will frazzle and fry, it's before the magnetic reversal of the shift, the poles and things. And that's intended to be, as I said again, nonviolent, with as minimal loss of life. I think the ETs will have already announced themselves at that time. That's my intuition. I don't know. Humanity must rise up. We must accept responsibility and go through those phases of fear and denial and anger, of what we didn't believe, the religious things are going to come down. Not that Christ didn't live, not that Buddha's not real, not that Muhammad was a true prophet, but to look at how the writings have been changed and manipulated and placed as priesthoods who have no more clue than you, who are in fact actually organized by groups who on the highest level are working against God to manipulate the religion to not tell the truth. Now, this does not mean there are not beautiful adherents to the word of Christ, spiritual pastors, mystics, nuns, cardinals, and whatever, who are very spiritual. But they work within a system that is a control matrix that lies, cheats, steals, runs governments, creates wars, worships the black sun, and has nothing to do with the laws of God or the mission of Christ. And that does not reflect on any of the true aspirants or people around the world who are following the message, as I stated. The good news, we have a living, loving Father, and by our faith in that glass half full and opening our hearts to God and letting our light shine into others, that we follow the golden rule. And how good am I at that? How good am I at that versus you and this person? That's not to be judged. That's God. And that's the spiritual side of this whole thing, is this growth and attention to spirit. And on the physical side, there's a reality of what's taken place. And you, you're a high thinker on that level. I feel like I have a good grasp, and I see where humanity's got to go, and I've got an idea of things. And, you know, some people, I remember sitting around at a conference and arguing with somebody, and I go, you know, everyone had these different views, and I get, okay, whoever's the best idea, that's the one that's going to be chosen by God. But it's really a group effort, and we all have to step into it. I think there's going to be an unleashing of a holy, sacred, spiritual vibration that will drop every person to their knees. The realization, a grand spiritual, luminous transformation of the psychophysical, spiritual being. And the people will realize immediately that they have been in error. And the Bible calls it weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's a course correction. We're always on auto course towards the living word of God in Christ. I mean, that's my verbiage for it, but it could be the Kshatriya Chaitanya and living according to the dictates of Vishnu and the highest levels of the Krishna avatar. So there's lots of different ways to look at this, but I think changes are going to be not exactly as I've stated, not exactly as we think it will be. And I think it's going to be, what was it in the 2001? Something beautiful, something wonderful is occurring. It's a change, and it will just, like a fire, transform the planet. And it's kind of like we've been following the prong course, and everyone's going to get on the ship and go, ahoy, we're going in the other direction. And everyone will pull together as a team and move forward as the best they can. Families will be healed. The money system will stop dividing people. Abundance and prosperity for all.
Yeah. You know, you have had an association with Cobra, who's always describing this event. Mm-hmm. And I think you've kind of touched on that just a little bit, that you do believe that we're coming up to this great shifting event. Expound on that a little bit more.
Well, as I said, I blogged on Cobra's blog. I really love Cobra. I believe he's absolutely sincere. I've done a lot for him. And he has a very unique bandwidth of information, which coincided to that teacher I told you at Gabriel Green's. I learned a lot about implants, the hostile genetic line of reptilian and the Greys, and that was kind of revealed through Bill Cooper and this gentleman who had been in a military abduction base. He was a high-level white hat, and he shared with me certain metaphysical and spiritual things that it's hard to explain because I was opened up psychically to perceive these things and had the experience. And basically, you know, it's like a drunk. They reach a certain level, and their outside energies react in them. And you have a normal guy, and something ticks him off, and he grabs, goes, buys a gun, and shoots a girlfriend and three kids, and you know, it's nuts. And that's not that person. It's another influence from a higher plane that is a parasite that wants blood and wants to experience and is angry at God, working through the implanted or the parasitic nature of the human consciousness field, which is not really understood or taught because we don't know who we are. We're not a super culture. The Jesuits have erased all the records in Luxor. You go there, and there were teams of Jesuits with chisels and hammers taking out all the references of benevolence-based contact and what really happened there. So people don't know the truth, and this needs to be brought forward. So the Cobra situation is I trust that he has a very good information on that technology of control. He started to reveal it. He says that he is a representative for a specific group that is engaging and to tell us about what I would call the plan of liberation or redemption of the aspects of removing the Satanist network of finances and to allow us to take down the criminal hostile elements, whether they're fallen angels or influenced by them or implanted, to for us to remove these people from positions of responsibility and trust that they have violated, and to allow them to be healed as we get free energy that we have, of course, has been suppressed. And when people find this out, they've been sitting in cars and traffic and destroying the planet's atmosphere and realize there's super maglev trains that go from New York to LA in like 20 minutes. People are going to be pissed.
Absolutely.
So we have to process that intelligently without anarchy and chaos, with love and respect,
right,
and to forgive and yet remove these people from those positions and to make a better way. And this will be met with every step we take. 10 steps from above will begin mentoring. So Cobra talks about the event. And his view of the event is worldwide arrests within, you know, possibly anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks. And that will have to include taking down all of the world's control of the world's satellites from NORAD and the various secret space bases and programs that act as sensors to release true information to the public. Not manipulated or spun, but actual records, documentation, data dumps of criminal activities of an incredibly large number worldwide of beings that have caused untold suffering to their fellow man through drugs, trafficking, manipulation, all the while enriching themselves at the cost of others, and the poor, innocent children of the world and the people in the third world have suffered the central banking system, these types of things. So this seamy underside will be exposed to the light of the day in a fell swoop movement, so to speak, that will be undeniable, that will allow people to process that, and then hopefully a plan will come forward, and we have to take care of that. Cobra, he has certain things about his secrecy and stuff, which that's his choice. I don't necessarily agree with that. I do not control him or his website. And there is, you know, I do my thing and he does his. I have been forced into like a financial, using my website to sell the health products. It was a natural transition. I worked very hard my whole life as a massage therapist. And this mission, as it came forward to me, and my age, I'd been transitioning. I had to create like a website and a shop. So that's kind of how I live, but I'm really behind the spiritual mission. And, you know, some people go, oh, you're just a new age texter selling stuff. It's actually the opposite. I'm a new age faithful who's looking for truth to unify the diversity. And, you know, I'm trying to share these technologies, which are kind of junior levels of the ET healing technology. So Cobra's information, I support. I believe he's real. Certain things he said, I knew he was wrong. I was proven right. And he didn't even mention that he was wrong. He just changed his tune. And like everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You said this, and all of a sudden you're saying that? I mean, how could you not know that? And it is, I think, done by the benevolence to keep everyone humble. You get certain information, and we're going to not tell you that. And you're an expert in this, but you didn't ask that, so we didn't tell you that. And someone else has this piece of the puzzle, and they're really wrong here. So I think we need to not be looking for one person for the whole truth. I think we all have certain aspects of the truth. I think your information and your experience in the government and your historical spiritual background and the understanding where you know that the finances and the Chinese elders definitely seem to be involved in this process. But we're going to move beyond gold. All that doesn't matter. It's because we're dumb and blind that we need to believe this gold. If I stood up and said, okay, I'm changing the rules of the game of life. No one needs gold. We all have our faith, and here's the new system. It's completely transparent. We will honor your work. Work, what is money, people? Money is stored energy,
yes.
Your work.
Right.
And I believe that through the law of allegiance, the Ubuntu theory, I don't think there anyone on the planet should earn more than 4 times what another person earns. That would keep things on a parity. And so that there's no divisiveness, there's no I, me, mine, I want, or looking down at others because they don't have what you have. And Christ spent all of his time with the poor.
Yeah.
So I think that's an example for those of us who are seeking the most toys wins theory. That will be revealed, and we have to look for the salvation of our soul and to seek for the virtues the Christ consciousness is a 12-faceted key to the soul's virtues that you accumulate in your afterlife and your eternal presence before God. That's loyalty, patience, honesty, perseverance, compassion, continence, equanimity, courage, humility, charity, or temperance, charity, and faith. Those, of course, are part of the astrological signs. And these lifetimes that we live are designed to give us experience. And it's opening up now for those of you who have meditations and go into the silence. The downloads of the spiritual energy and the perspective of how you think your life's important is really... I'm having meditations now where, like, just forget all that stuff. Yeah. Let's just flow and feel. And it's easier to do here in Maui, isn't it, Dave?
Well, that's interesting. What led you to being here in Maui? Because, you know, I'm from Sedona, and I absolutely believe Sedona is one I call those magical, sacred places here on the planet.
It is, yeah.
And but Maui is as well. And you're not a native here. You haven't lived here. How long have you been here in Maui?
Well, I've been here. The islands, my father moved here in 1965. So I did spend many years in on the Oahu surfing. And I worked out with the Hale Kalani guys. And I ended up being a lifeguard in Laguna. I was very much into the ocean. So I spent from 65, I think my dad left here in 85.
Okay.
So 20 years he was, and I spent a lot of time on Oahu. I came here in 2000 to 2004 and lived here on Maui and really fell in love with it. And I always had a lot of things going on the mainland with my son. I always wanted to go back and visit. So I always go back and forth. But this time, this is my main home, and I'm going to take my short visits to the mainland or wherever I'm guided to go. But I'm returning here. This is... very sacred and beautiful space, and I came here because I love the ocean and I just love the green.
Yeah,
there's no you got ocean around you, so negative ions and the trade winds, plus we're in the center of the Ring of Fire. This is the top of Lemuria, and Louis here, and we're going to be doing an activation which is very important for the spiritual energies of the planet. It's a special place. The Hawaiian Islands will rise. When Lemuria was destroyed, most people don't know, and they take, oh, that mountain was created over 3 inches a year for how many? No. The Machu Picchu was oceanside. Boom. The Lemuria went down, and Machu Picchu is now, I don't know how many thousand feet high, but, you know, those things happen very quickly in the life of the planet. So I think I'm here to just enjoy my life and be much more calmer and relaxed and to continue my own healing and transformational process here.
There is a when I came here in December, it was my first time here, and I felt it right away that there's a presence and an energy that is here. You can come here as a tourist and be in totally in your head and miss it all. You know, in the same way as you can come to Sedona and miss it all. But if you quiet yourself and you go within and you feel what is there, you realize there's something that's different here. It's very, very different. And people are called to those places. And what I notice is that, see, when I go back home to Sedona, I don't always feel it immediately, but when I wake up the next morning, I sense there's a difference. And the energy of Sedona for me is a grounding energy. Everything becomes peaceful, everything becomes grounded, everything is okay in the world. And that kind of clears me out to mm-hmm. where I just get downloads of information when I'm there. And stuff comes to me and doors seem to open that just doesn't seem to happen anywhere else. But it also happens here. I've been here now for about a week. But I admit, this week was kind of we had the workshop on Saturday that was outstanding. And the people mm-hmm. just, you know, they shared that and it reflected on that. There's been, within me, there's almost been a little bit of a tension, and I didn't really catch what was going on, but all of a sudden this morning, I was in a point time of meditation that some things were clarified to me. It says, like, you're coming and stepping into a place where the energy is different for you, but it's also like you're kind of going through a shedding of a skin. Mm-hmm. And that's not always a comfortable process. While you're in the midst of the shedding of the skin, you're wondering, what's going on? I don't know that. But when it's over, you can look back and you realize you got rid of some old stuff.
That's a very... I feel the same way in Shasta. I've observed people. I've lived there on and off for 20 years, too. Yeah. These vortex sites, you have absolute communion and bliss with nature.
Yes. Yes.
And then you will go through some transformations and your world can break down and the emotions of things can spike in these locations. Sedona, I absolutely adore. It's one of the first contact places of Venus. It was an outpost of Lemurian colony there, and that was one of the first contacts of the Venusians over 200,000 years ago, and there's some repositories and bases there that I'm told will be very important in the future. But for me, that place is so hot, and I'm such a sweater. I need the ocean or the lake, Castle Lake, but I love it at certain point times of the year when I've been there. I mean, it's magical. And when it rains out there, rain on the desert, the ozone and the smell, nectar.
I lived in the Seattle area for 32 years, and it's interesting because I come here to Maui, and I can be driving around on some of the back roads, and I feel like in some ways I'm on some of the back roads of the Willamette Valley in Oregon, because everything is green. The grass is everywhere. It's just maybe some of the trees and a little bit of the topography might be a little bit different, and it's a little warmer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Northwest on the west side of the Cascade Mountains is much like this. Everything is green. But in Seattle, it was always cool. And after a while, it kind of wore on me. But
yeah, and it rains so much.
It does. And
it
gets
even cold cool. It's even colder.
It's a colder cool. And I lived there for 32 years in Seattle. I lived in the Northwest my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Oregon when I was 2. Yep. So from the time of 2 until the time, you know, just until it was 3 years ago. And I always wondered, how would I adjust to the desert? And I actually adjusted very, very well. And when you say it's so hot there, actually Sedona is very livable. Now, Phoenix is where it's unbearable. I mean, we run about 14 to 16 degrees cooler in Sedona than they do in Phoenix. And the summers are actually very tolerable. I was amazed. But there was something that was more than me. I was called to that place.
There's a starkness there.
When
you get in the desert, it's this level of quiet.
Yes.
That you don't get in the city of Phoenix, but in Sedona, it's the nature is beauty, and there's a silence and an energy that you can feel. It's palpable.
I love it where I live. I step out the door into the driveway of my home, and I'm looking at Cathedral Rock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In 10 minutes, I can be on the trails. And you go out there, there's something about getting out there into the nature and walking in the trails. You don't always feel it necessarily at the moment, but there is a resurgence of the energy, the vortex energy that comes out of the ground there,
mm-hmm.
that just kind of refreshes you, renews you, balances you.
Mm-hmm.
When I get back home after an hour to hour and a half hike, I'll feel it, you know. And I don't always at the moment, but it's almost like there's a silencing and a peacefulness and a resurgence and a refreshing that comes out of that place. I mean, but that's home for me. I was told in one of my past lives I lived there as a Hopi shaman. So it was easy for me. I returned home when I went back to Sedona, and I very much felt that.
Nyahate.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it's interesting as we're seeing these shifts and these developments beginning to take place. First of all, I'm really enjoying this time listening to your story and the things that you have to share. I'm very appreciative of that because you have so much experience. I remember when I was here my first time and I met with you, it was almost like, this guy is one guy, he kind of lives with almost like a half a step in the etheric world and three quarters of the other part is in the 3D world. But it's like you're always kind of out there having these etheric experiences that very few of us get to have. And with that, you've been able to share your experiences to help us understand some of the stuff that is there. So what else? You know, an open conversation.
Yeah, so I'd like to say that a lot of my experiences were in my younger youth, the real transformative ones that laid the background for my information. I'd say some of my best work and the contact experiences were my youth. Now I know that, you know, like if I meet an ET in a situation, they smile at me. It's very charming. If they're a beautiful man or woman, it's a very brief encounter. It's telepathic, and I don't have like the intellectual thing. It's like a positive affirmation of what I'm doing at a certain point in time, and there's certain things there. So I don't really have that type of contact. I'm a visionary and a mystic. I have profound dreams, and I'm kind of adult and slow in some things. I stumble into things, and some of my most profound experiences have been, I've been not so graceful with them. And, you know, but the message comes through afterwards, and it's kind of like I stumbled in, and, you know, they caught me before I fell down and blew it all, and they stand up and they go, "Wow, you made it." Not very gracefully, but you made it, and you kind of learned and move on. I think a lot of it is adjusting to an ever greater level of humility in sharing the message, and to not make it about me, but make it about the information or the transformation. We sometimes have to leave our bona fides on the table a little bit. You know, I was a senator, I did this and that. I'm not just some guy off the street who drank the Kool-Aid and learned everything in the internet. I have a background, a history, I'm educated, I understand this stuff, and I'm going to articulate for you certain information that if it makes sense to you, you can amend your life and move into a more beneficial relationship with yourself and others through what I'm sharing with you. And it's not something you can force on people. Like I said, you can't shove the spinach down their throats like I used to think you could do and then go, "You don't get it," and have a chip on my shoulder and go, "You're bat blank crazy," is the way they look at me. So, and Cobra's very good at that. He keeps himself at a distance. He has a mystery around him because he modulates his voice. Is that calculated? I'd have to say a little bit yes. It's personal power. People only see him. People go to his workshop. You've been to four or five, and you've only known him for 15 days. Really, you know what I mean? So I've spent some time with him in Thailand. I know him probably a little more than the average person. I don't consider him my overlord, and I'm not his underling. I agree with most of his information on the inner planes resonates with me. Some of it absolutely doesn't, and sometimes I keep my mouth quiet about it. I don't want to be seen as contentious with this information when I interview him and stuff like that, but I feel that he's really sincere, and I believe a lot of his information is true. I thought we were going to Syria. He goes, "No, we're not going into Syria," and we still haven't, really. But they tried it, what, in 2012, I think, or 13. It was a done deal. They were pushing hard. Bomb, 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 Iran. Remember John McCain? Yeah. That kind of disrespectful joking of life and death for innocent people and the people that run this. And you thought, my God, if they want war, they just announce it and it happens. And he was right. So he's made a lot of accurate information things. He possibly can't know. The resistance doesn't know every person's reaction and how this will take place. It's a free-flow, open plan with higher spiritual beings able to have plans, and the love keeps flowing, and where it flows, they reinforce with the message. If a person becomes unethical or something, that person has to go through growth, and other channels are bought, and so many people are having similar experiences. All of you out there who have your own intuition and knowledge, I honor that. I respect you. I ask you to come forward with your truth and knowledge. Not everyone has to be a speaker. Not everyone is a presenter. Not everyone's a nerd to be able to create technologies. Find your niche, and if it's taking care of children, invite me over because I love little kids. You know what I mean? We all have to do what's right in our world, and for some people, this system has us so against the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people are just struggling to feed themselves. They can't think of like, I'm going to start a new age light center.
Yeah. I think the thing, you know, each of us has our own positions of where we are, where we've been guided and we've been directed. You have some very, very unique experiences. And I think, you know, in our conversations before, we know sometimes we might see things just a little bit differently. But part of that is just the experiences that we've been through. I think I've really enjoyed this time sitting and listening to you. It's helped me understand you more and to see where you're coming from. I mean, with myself, I mean, I know there's a very uniqueness in what I've been guided to do, mm-hmm. and part of my job is to help on a step-by-step basis, is to bring these funds forward to the everyday common people so that we as humanity can move into being set free from literally well over 1,000 years of financial slavery, if not even longer. This is the time for that. This is the time for that to be released. That's my job. That's what I do. Well, and I have been divinely guided into contacts that just sometimes blow my mind and says, how did I even get here?
Mm-hmm. Me too, yeah, for sure.
It was like yesterday. I have to be careful about, I can't disclose all of it, but I hopped on the puddle jumper and went here from Maui over to Oahu to Honolulu yesterday, and I sat down with members of the Royal Hawaiian family.
I know, I love that guy. He's awesome.
And we were discussing what is the real issues, what's the importance that is here. And I shared some of this that I had not shared before at my workshop on Saturday, is that there is a role of the natives, and whether it's the Royal, it's the Hawaiian natives, or even it's the Native Americans, and that's led me to my experiences, you know, with Michael Lee Hill, who is a true Nephilim, and it has been proven by his DNA and the blood test that mm-hmm. goes on within him, and he's in touch with a lot of the Native Americans from the Great Lakes regions, of knowing who they are, and that both of those groups know that they are descendants of the Anunnaki. But I have clarified that they are more of what I call the Enki clan versus the Enlil clan. And it's reflective in the Native American practices. And what I'm seeing, and I've discussed this with them, is that it's time for the land to be returned to the natives, because they are the guardians of the earth. They have been the caretakers of the earth. They are the ones that are really in touch with the harmony and the vibration of the earth. They know how to, what I would call, energetically heal this planet.
Absolutely.
And that is their gift. That is who they are to us. That was taken from them. And they have been put into demeaning positions, and some of them have forgotten who they are. I think we're going to see the resurgence of them coming back, and they're going to
step. We are them, too. We're natives of
right,
Earth.
Right, I know.
So I don't see it as a racial thing.
It's not
I see it as all the natives, the way they lived in harmony with the land.
Absolutely.
We have been so divorced from it for so long in our cities and our money systems. You look at the Hawaiians, the Aboriginals, even the Indians to a certain extent, and, of course, all the other indigenous peoples of the world, whose very life depends on food, shelter, and clothing. When we came in with our technology, we messed them up by taking over and stealing from them.
Yes. Yeah.
And we ourselves have been part of that process and have stolen from. So we all have to get back to those Native American, let's call it the absolute spirit of aloha and the absolute respect and stewardship of the land that the natives hold.
Because I think those of us,
and if they're going to lead the way, then great.
Yeah, and I think they will lead the way, is because that's their calling. That's what they have always led for us. And for those of us that have been predominantly in the high technology of the Western third dimensional culture, we've lost that and we've forgotten that. And they will lead the way. But when they do that, they will take the land and come bring it back into harmony, and will, to me, they will literally raise the vibration of the planet. And when the vibration of the planet raises, it raises the vibration for all of us. And that's their gift. And what I've understood, okay, to do that, now how do you do that? And still, when you live in a structural world of third dimensional fact that you still got to have money and there's still laws and regulations to go through, is that funds will be released to them, and they will have the ability. Yes, it will be through an eminent domain, but they will buy the land back so that you don't have anarchy and taking over and power and control. The people who think they own it now will be compensated, but they'll say, it was never yours in the first place. You'll be compensated because you paid for it, you're going to be compensated, but they're going to take it back and restore. And I think that's what we're going to see. And that's the discussions that I've been able to have with Michael Lee and also with the Hawaiians here. And because Hawaii, they describe what it's called, what is it? The belly button.
The hara.
This is the heart, almost, of the energy of the planet that comes out of this place. And I think that's why we're going to see it starting here.
I hope so.
I really do. And I don't know. I just, there's something that's very, very deeply says, that's my job. My job is to help bring the funds to them and others, so that we start healing ourselves, healing the human race, freeing ourselves from the financial slavery we've been involved in. And I let others do whatever they do. I don't have to go and do all that other stuff.
I'd like to see, however it happens, I mean, if you or someone, show me the money. I mean,
I know.
On one level, I like to see that happen, but who's to decide who gets it all? These are the things that it's prosperity, and I think that some of the ideas, I've been looking at this, and I think a lot of the ideas and how we think, you know, finances will go may be different. There may be a different scene come on. We'll just go, what? We're good thought with, you know, that's actually a better idea. That calms it down. It may have a different situation where I'd like to see a moratorium and a science board created on the planet that has a absolute empirical scientific evidence of technology that goes against life. Yeah. And anybody that's creating a product that's designed to be bought and sold and ingested that destroys your body and is against God's natural laws of digestion and is actually a poison to you, that company doesn't say, oh, I need money, I'm going to do it because my food will last longer on the shelf and I'll become richer and I'll feed you. They'll stop it because it's not right, and we can have free energy and spaceships, so we can create all the smoothies where they grow, and they can be here in Hawaii or in desert areas in 2 seconds, so that there's no need for the negative technologies. When we look at radioactivity and other harmful technologies such as fossil fuels that create through attrition and through other things, putting elements in the air that are negative to our body, those things have to end immediately. Excellent. And alternatives created. Yeah. And no matter what it takes, we're not going to have fossil fuels and plastic. We're going to create alternatives. And I'm sorry, all you companies that are worried about that and your economy is going to go down. That's the argument of the cabal. We can't stop our money machine and the oil-based economy that we fooled you into because we make money and parasite and destroy the earth. No, we have to make the sacrifice. It's like the cane growers here have to take the sacrifice, and I'm sorry. Yeah. 800 people lose their jobs. Go into organic gardening.
Right.
You're not burning cane anymore and spraying insecticide and burning it and destroying the health of the people on Maui by Alexander Baldwin, Jesuit, history, who came here and said, you heathens, how dare you? And they bought these Kiavi plants that have stickers on them so that wherever the natives walked, they would stick their feet and they would wear shoes. I mean, arrogance.
Yeah. So, we've been here for about an hour and 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know, but I mean, my program goes 2 hours, so I can go up to that.
But, well, I thank you so much. I've got a lot of things to do. My conference is tomorrow. I'd love to stay a little bit longer.
I know.
We could maybe do another one at some point in time, but
yeah.
I got to get my son. I have to print out the schedules. I got a bunch of little things for my conference, and tomorrow evening is the presentation other things. But I'd love to continue this, and I thank you so much for your fine conversation and your hospitality again here, Mark and Dave.
Yes.
For having me. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Robin. And I agree. You know, we just let it kind of flow where it did. It did. It flowed very well. I'm so thankful for the information.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you were with us here again. I know that I'll have you back.
Because
it will always be that I'm enjoying the connection and the contact and the friendship that we're developing. We both have the same heart of what we want to
do. And I want to say, anyone who's listening, Dave's event, everyone who went, I had a fantastic report from everyone. I was presenting at Temple of Peace on that day. But it was a beautiful event, and many people enjoyed it quite a bit. So, kudos. One of these days, I will make one of your events. It just happened to be
I know I'm coming back to Hawaii. I may go over and do it on Hawaii.
The Big Island.
The main island next time.
Oh, okay.
Because it makes it available for more people.
Because
you know, the bottom line is, if you're not here on Maui and you come here from one of the other islands, it's going to cost you $200 just in a plane trip. You know?
Yeah, that's one of the things about an island, but that's one of the good things about an island, too.
But this one was not about how many people I attracted. It was because of the intent and the purpose and some of the roots that we were planting here. But I'll be back. I love this place.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, if you can cover your venue expenses, you've got your mission, and you got more people educated, and that's what we're doing. It's not about money, and it's not about fame, and it's not about doing another seminar. It's about the transmission of the Ho'oponopono, the aloha spirit,
yeah,
and the connection to the kama'aina and the deep respect for the land.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob. It was a pleasure to having you with you here
right.
tonight. And folks, we want to thank you again on this version of the Sedona Connection, just to let you know that always, we always enjoy everything that you have to say. You can always send me emails with any of your comments and your questions, and it's always a wonderful time.
Thank you so much. I want to mention,
yes,
I have a website called The Promise Revealed, and I will be having a summer conference with Louis Martins at the end of July, this brother from Bolivia who's here now. If you want to check that out in our upcoming events, we just kind of figured out the ticket sale prices and everything, so it's opening up. And if you want to hear more about this type of information with this beautiful brother from Bolivia, you're welcome to join us. Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, so thepromiserevealed.com.
That's correct.
That's your website, and that's how people can get in touch with you, and that's where
Absolutely.
They can also go to listen to your weekly radio program called...
Yeah, and you'll see Dave Schmidt's interview there archived up there under the Victor Vite radio shows.
Good.
And you'll see this one under Interviews of Others by me very soon, too.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it. Thank
Bye.
You, everybody. Okay,
Bye.
Good night.